Another day in paradise. I meant pandemic. This is another day in the global pandemic. But you know, and well, you know, you airplane listeners, I'm supposed to be doing evergreen subjects depending on when you're playing this game. But I have a feeling this whole pandemic is going to be evergreen for quite a bit. So I think we're safe. At least in the United States. But you know, as far as pandemics go, it's kind of, I mean, you know, I'm walking around a park recording a podcast. When you hear the word pandemic, you don't really think that's the activity that can still be carried on during a global crisis. And yet here we are, and I think that's progress. You know, when you think of, you know, the Spanish flu, you know, where people still, you know, doing the Charleston or whatever they did for fun. It feels like you just imagine pictures of people, like, huddled in the corners of their homes, hoping to be spared. And yet, I'm walking past a swan in a lovely park. It's a beautiful day, a little overcast, but can't complain. At least, you know, the forests aren't on fire as they are in California at this moment. Also another evergreen topic, probably. So it's a bit weird. It's cognitive dissonance, you know. It's like the news is telling us the world is on fire, and yet you walk outside if you're not in California and it looks pretty okay. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of people who are suffering right now, and that's not great. But at least you're on a digital airplane, listening to my soothing voice. The beautiful sounds of geese on the lake. They don't know there's a pandemic. They don't know what's going on. I think that's why animal videos have become so popular in our day and age. It's because you look at an animal and you just, you know, they don't know what's going on. They don't know. And that's beautiful. I think we like to place ourselves in the position of these animals when we watch these videos and think of how nice it would be to step out of our own consciousness, to step into, I don't want to say lower consciousness, because I don't want to be human supremacist. Because in a lot of ways, I think humans really fucked up by evolving the way we did. Some days it seems like sex was designed to be so good that we wouldn't have the time or patience to evolve into all this enlightenment, rational reasoning bullshit that is now causing so much pain and anguish in our lives. Ever think about that? What if we just loved sex so much that we did not ever get to the Industrial Revolution? Would there be global warming? Would there be catastrophic climate change? Would there be pandemics? Would there be massive poverty and famine? I don't know. I think our lifespans would be shorter, and that would also solve a lot of problems. I think a lot of the anxieties and issues we encounter in our lives is because our lives are so long, and there's not really that much to do, and we get bored. We get bored, and that causes a lot of problems in our lives, because the boredom actually causes us to create problems. Humans are little drama machines. We're all little drama queens and kings and theys. We're addicted to stories. And so if the story becomes boring, we have to create conflict. Stories are driven by conflict. And you extrapolate from the individual to the society, and you can understand why we're always self-sabotaging ourselves with technology that does not necessarily help us. But in the name of progress, we do it anyway, in the name of proceeding with the story. Wars are little stories we tell ourselves at the great cost of real human lives, just for the drama, and of course for profit, but that ties into the story that we tell ourselves of greatness, of meaning, of achievement, of protection. So I just think we should be fucking in a park, everyone. I think maybe, you know, I used to really place so much. I would look down upon people who just thought, you know, life is about eating and fucking, and no, you're supposed to enlighten yourself and study philosophy and write beautiful stories and try to figure out this human experience that we all share. And I think I've been very wrong about that. I really do. And maybe that's because my identity as a stand-up comedian has been stripped away by the pandemic. And I don't know who I am anymore. I'm a podcaster now, of all things. Maybe that's why I'm having these thoughts. I don't know, but I think we can all feel the void, right? I think we all feel the void. Even before the pandemic, there was a void, I think largely caused by the isolation of social media and the modern world, which I think in a lot of ways is a huge error, a huge misstep. I don't know if we'll be able to pull back from, because the era of progress does not point backwards, ever. It would really be something if we could actually untangle ourselves from the technology that we've unleashed on the world. I think it would take a really hip movement. If just some really cool, like, Billie Eilish figure was like, everyone get off social media. Maybe that could be it. Maybe TikTok will actually be the app that saves us. We think it's going to destroy us because China is spying on us through it, but maybe it's the app that will save us. If some TikToker goes viral for deleting their app, how about that? I don't know. Something's gotta happen. Something big is on the horizon. I think we all feel that something big is on the horizon. Right now, in this moment of time, it is September. The election has not yet happened, possibly one of the most controversial elections that will happen in our lifetimes. I mean, besides 2016. And depending on when you're listening to this, maybe chaos has already broken loose. Maybe you're in a bunker. Maybe there are factions of people in the streets. I don't know what's going to happen. It's just a big question mark, a big lingering question mark. But one thing that's for certain, and that brings me personally a lot of peace, is that no matter who wins the election, there will be chaos. If there's anything we know for sure, it's that there is not any result that will not bring chaos. And I think that feeling of certainty is actually quite calming. I think that's nice. Everything is so uncertain, except that there will be chaos in November. And that's something to look forward to. I'm going to try to leave the country. I'm going to try to get on a real plane, hopefully a real plane, and get on out of here. I don't know if I want to be around for what's going to happen on November or December or whenever they end up tallying all these mail-in votes. It's unclear. Seems weird to have an experimental new voting process for such a contentious election. Seems like a misstep. I mean, if we're opening, you know, Cuomo just decided to open restaurants to 25% capacity in New York. Seems hasty. It seems like a mixed signal. On one hand, we're saying we're not doing enough and the viruses are going crazy and we need to get more lockdowns before the big spike in the fall. And on the other hand, we're opening up indoor gyms. Gyms! Where a lot of heavy breathing and contact with equipment occurs. I just don't really understand it. And so if we're allowing all that, it seems like maybe having people show up to the polls is not as big of a risk as it might be. I mean, of course, for elderly and immunocompromised people, there should be some kind of mail-in or other exception. That makes sense. The majority of people, I think, in order to reduce the amount of chaos that will ensue due to people arguing about the validity of the results if we try this new mail-in thing. It's not new. We have had it, but not on a massive scale like this. In order to avoid and mitigate the amount of bickering and arguing that will occur over the validity of the results, maybe it'd be worth it. to have people, for the most part, go in to vote as we always have. But I guess, I don't know. I mean, look, pumping weights is also important. Going to the polls, maybe not as important as pumping weights. I don't really know. I mean, like, I in my new schema of the world, pumping weights is actually more important because that will lead you to find a mate to have sex in a park with so that you don't have to think about things like voting. So in a sense, maybe Cuomo's correct. Get to the gym, not the polls. Pump weights, not polls. I don't know. I just don't know. I do know that I am in my childhood bedroom these days. I don't know how many of you have been relegated to living in the past, but in order to save rent, you know, I normally live in the city, but everything's closed. Comedy clubs are closed. The only shows that are happening are in parks and rooftops and weird little patios until Cuomo shuts them down again. And so there's no need to be spending the amount of rent one must spend to live in the city right now. So I've sublet my place, and I'm in the home where I spent my time from high school to early college. And I grew up in a very Muslim home. It's not as Muslim anymore. My mom, to her credit, has chilled out quite a bit. But if you're a regular listener of the pod, you'll know she was a bit of a psycho when I was growing up. And so I'm being triggered. I'm being triggered by my own home. I'm having all these memories. Was not even allowed to mention the names of men in the home, pretty much. Just any kind of suggestion that I might have some sort of sexuality prior to being married to a Muslim pharmacist was a big no-no. But, you know, I got rebellious. I decided to slap up a poster of Blink-182 on my wall. Tom DeLonge, big crush of mine. Mark Hoppus actually is a funny guy on Twitter, I realized recently. Kind of funny. And then Tom DeLonge, you know, of course, went down the alien rabbit hole, and now the government is verifying things that he's been saying. What a world. I just don't know what to make of anything anymore. But longtime fan, Blink-182. And after I put that poster up, guess what Mom does? Slaps up a wall hanging of Mecca right next to it. Mecca and Blink-182. As if to be like, who's drawing bigger crowds though? Travis Barker? Or Allah and his only prophet, Muhammad. Real one-up move from my mother. And I remember she always warned me growing up against getting anesthesia. She'd be like, if you ever have to go to the dentist or the doctor, never get knocked out because that's when they can take advantage of you. How insane. So I got my wisdom teeth out. I got local anesthesia only. Got to feel the vibrations of bones being knocked out of my mouth. And I never questioned what she said when I was growing up. But now as an adult, I'm like, oh my God. Was my mom watching like porn like it was the evening news? You know? Like, don't worry, Mom. I won't get anesthesia. I won't get stuck under any tables. I don't know. It's so bizarre. And then I remember going to the orthodontist to see about getting some braces, which, side note, I did eventually get. Wore for a couple years. Then felt like I did my work and I should not have to wear a retainer. A retainer? It's like I already did the work of the braces. Now you want me to do... add insult to injury, I should be free, and you want to put more shackles on my teeth with a retainer. It's the same feeling as like when there's an introduction to a book. It's like, I'm already reading the book. You want me to do reading before the reading? you're lucky, I mean, you're lucky that I have the book at all. That's not how I really feel. I love reading, but, you know, I'm trying to be relatable to you people. But I just refused to wear the retainer, and so now the bottom row of my teeth are all jacked up. Which the ex-trolls, the first to notice, I think. No one has ever commented on my teeth until I got canceled. And they, to their credit, it's not that noticeable. I don't have many photos where you can tell, but they found it. Good on them. But anyway, the orthodontist was like, oh, your mouth is too small. Like, he decided my mouth is clinically too small. And he wanted to put in a device in addition to the braces to widen my mouth. Which I refused, and also, too small for what? Like, what is this 50-year-old guy looking into my 15-year-old mouth for? Going, oh, this isn't gonna do it. What's in store for this little lady? I don't think this is gonna be enough. I just don't understand. Like, is there a standard mouth size we're supposed to be meeting? Yet another constraint on the female body that I'm supposed to live up to? Having a big enough mouth? But again, now as an adult, I think back to that, and I want to go back to that orthodontist and be like, hey, can I get a doctor's note for a couple things? Turns out the small mouth is becoming something of an issue. So, and I'm testing the waters with what I can do around my mom. Like I said, she has chilled out a lot, but I was trying to smoke a little bit, just a tiny little bowl, smoke a tiny little bowl at my window, my bedroom window. Really did not think she would, that the odor would be noticeable, and yet I smoke, and I didn't come up with a plan before becoming high, just in case she did notice it, which she did, so I'm already high, and then she walked into my room and goes, what's that smell? And luckily, the universe finally, for a moment, on my side, my phone starts ringing. And so I pretend to get distracted with answering the phone. I'm like, oh, it's a candle. And she squeezes in another question, like, where's the candle? And I say, it went away. And then I answer the phone. The candle, it went away. It's gone now. And if I had not had that call to answer, I think she would have been able to ask that pivotal follow-up question. What do you mean it went away? The candle. Candles just come and go. You know how candles just come and go. So I thought maybe in the morning she would inquire some more, but she did not. And so I made up for my mistakes, and I got an actual candle. So I set that in my room, and I put the candle on, and then I smoked again, thinking if she comes in, I can this time show her the candle is back. The candle has returned, and is thus emanating this odor. And I also had Febreze, and I Febrezed, but did not help at all. She walks in, she's like, "Are you doing that smell again? Are you doing that smell again?" And she goes, "I recognize that smell. I smelled it on your stepdad's jacket." And, but she didn't inquire past that. She just, I think she's trying to respect my privacy, my adulthood. My adulthood. I am an adult, despite being in my childhood bedroom. I am an adult. And she kind of let it go. She just kind of said some things like, I just want you to be healthy and safe. So now I've just been taking walks. I take walks and I smoke just to avoid the interaction. But then, so then I'm like, okay, well, she definitely knows that I drink and that my brother drinks a lot. She probably doesn't even know how much he drinks. So I get these little, you know, the mini liquors, those little mini liquor bottles. I've been hiding those in a little corner of my room just to add to a seltzer, just to top off the night, you know. And then she actually found those bottles and was totally totally chill about it. I thought she was going to give me another speech. But she goes, you know, I used to enjoy a little bit of wine in my young days too. It's like, whoa. Okay, well, so now I'm going to drop acid at the dinner table and see what else she's into, you know? Like, what else is she going to reveal? What if I just do a line of coke at dinner? So I'm exploring new territory with my mother. That's good. It's suburban life, you know, it's not quite as terrible as I thought it would be. You know, the biggest change of the pandemic is not being out every night. I was out every night doing comedy. Nighttime was a friend. And I've become a little dissociated from the nighttime. It's strange. It's strange having not much to do at night. But other than that, it's nice having space. It's nice having this lovely park. It's nice not having the constant noise pollution. The noise pollution, you forget exactly how extreme it is until you go somewhere a little bit quieter. And I'm not in the most, you know, quiet area. There's two bi-level shopping malls that I grew up next to, and they're still here. One of which, by the way, drove past the sign, so they're doing live outdoor comedy nights, which I shudder to think what kind of comedians are doing that. What I assume must be a family-friendly comedy show outside the mall parking lot. And yet at the same time, I want to angrily find out who's setting this up and say, well, I'm the comedian of the town. Why aren't you hitting me up? Why aren't I getting these shopping mall outdoor gigs? Maybe I might even do it. I don't know. It could be a fun story. But yeah, there's something nice about just slowing down a little bit. And, you know, there's all these articles coming out every day about, is New York dead? Is New York City dead? Is it alive? One of the owners of Stand Up New York and another club in New York wrote an op-ed about how New York City is dead. And then Seinfeld resentfully wrote an op-ed retort in the Times to that guy. He must have a personal vendetta against him, and he was just bitterly responding. There's no other reason for him to do that. Even though Seinfeld is not even in New York anymore, it's absurd. So, it's unclear what will happen to the city. People are saying, you know, people are going to start moving out of the big cities and maybe creating new scenes in other places. And I hope that's true, because I am not a fan of New York City. I think it's a dehumanizing place. I think it's weird that I have to walk by people on the street who live on the street, pretend they're not there. You know, for all the social justice that's happening right now, which I think is wonderful, we don't really focus on the people who are suffering most in our society. And you're faced with it every day in New York City. You're faced with the most extreme luxury and extreme destitution, all cramped up on this little 8-mile island. It's a very unique place, and it would be a shame if it were overtaken completely by the foreign criminals that run the real estate there and drive up all the rent prices. It would be a shame if it just became a haven, a tax haven for financial criminals. And yet, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I wouldn't mind if the comedy scene restructured in another place, you know. Maybe Joe Rogan will make Austin the new L.A. or New York or whatever. He's gone from L.A. Looks like, you know, there's also articles about the mass exodus that is happening from L.A. I'm sure the ravaging wildfires are not helping L.A.'s case. So it'd be interesting to see if there's a restructuring of the country. And I would not mind going to a place like Austin for comedy. I've never been there, but I think it sounds pretty cool. Maybe there's some other places where the comedy scene could happen. I don't really know. Or maybe I'll just go back to grad school. You know? Comedy It's really a dying industry, stand-up comedy. Everything has gone digital. Stand-up really stopped making sense a while ago. I do stand-up, and I feel like a little a traveling joke salesman. I'm going to all these places, doing the same set of jokes. With the advance of social media and the internet, it seems antiquated. I mean, I know that there is a qualitative difference between a live stand-up show and watching it online, but I feel like it's not that big a difference, to be honest. I think the difference between watching, like, live music and, like, a music video, there's a huge difference there. There's just such a different energy, and you can really put on a show with music, whereas with stand-up, you know, just typically a person talking through a microphone. And that's something I think about a lot. I think stand-up is going to need to compete with all of the emerging forms of online comedy. Comedy, I put in quotes, because the things that are happening online on YouTube and TikTok are truly egregious and not very funny most of the time. But it seems to be what the people are going for and what the industry is upholding. The industry, the comedy industry now, is plucking people from who are rising stars on social media and turning them into stand-up comedians and giving them specials and things like that. So it just seems a little bleak, but I think it leaves a space for the form of stand-up to shift a little bit. I always try to think of how I could make a live show more exciting and more fun as somebody who has an act that is very much stand in place and dryly deliver material. I try to think of how I can make that a more enjoyable live experience for someone in the crowd. You know, even I will talk. Once I hit like the 25-minute point, I'm like, I cannot believe people are still listening to me. I would be asleep. Just the tenor of my voice, the energy. So I think there's an interesting space to try to do something new with live stand-up to make it a more appealing live experience to compete and to keep clubs in business. You know, a lot of them are going to be shutting down because of the pandemic. Some of them already have. So it's a time. It's a renaissance, you know. The renaissance must happen. We must figure out how to push forward through these things, how art will survive in the age of brutal capitalism. Or maybe capitalism will fall. I don't know. Maybe Earth will slam the brakes on its rotation and we'll all go flying. I think about that a lot. It's easy to get wrapped up in all of our earthly matters, all of our local and global issues. You have to sit back and realize you have to think about Carl Sagan, think about his infamous words, we're on this, what does he say, big blue dot, something more poetic than that. And the only reason we don't feel ourselves floating through space is because we're in constant motion. And all it would take is for some sort of disturbance in the magnetic fields of the sun or the earth. Just have a little jolt, just a tiniest jolt in our acceleration. And to accelerate. And like, as though in a car, and your goofy friend smoking weed slams the brakes so that you can hit your head on the dashboard and it's a big funny joke. The earth could do that. And it would be a funny joke to go flying into outer space, just like Elon Musk wants. And all the rich people already be on their way to Mars, because they would have the news that the Earth's rotation is about to fuck up, and they would keep the news to themselves and go up on their SpaceX ships and bring some kids that they can start the new generation with and used for other nefarious purposes, depending which billionaires are on the ship. I know I can't smear anybody on this podcast. I can't do it, but you can extrapolate what I'm talking about. And maybe that could be that. Earth slams the brakes. 2020. Good night.